Thank you, Tommy. Good morning, church. It's good to see you. Good to be with you as always. I'm just excited to be a part of Forest Mill, a congregation like Forest Mill, where young men want to lead prayers and old guys do a pretty good job too there, Andy. And I remember when I was a young man, I was starting to do things like lead prayers and the time we were passing the Lord's Supper trays, and I was so nervous. If you've never done it, leading prayers is the most nerve-wracking thing besides preaching. It is, it can make you really nervous, and so I just want to commend Wade on a great, great job. I remember that vividly and think he did a great job. Proud of him. And David did a great job leading our Lord's Supper time. That was just really thought-provoking, and Tommy was okay, too. All right. Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes you got it, sometimes you don't. Anyway, Ray, somebody did a great job dressing you today. If y'all have not seen Ray's socks, they match his sweater perfectly. My wife said it's a lovely shade of periwinkle. I don't know about all that, but you are decked out today. It's looking good. And if you have, speaking of decked out, if you've not seen the fellowship room, where the ladies are going to be gathering later today, it looks amazing. And I don't know who all put in time on that, but you ladies, I mean, You went all out, and it looks wonderful, and I hope that the ladies' time together. I think Courtney had a part in it, yeah, and maybe Peggy and Natalie and Danielle. And anyway, I'm going to miss somebody, but I know they all did stuff, and I know it's going to be a really great gathering. Thankful for those who worked on it, organized it. It's going to be really good. I'm just fine with a burger. You ladies need all that stuff over there, but that's going to be great. You may remember last week we started looking at the Ten Commandments. Oops, wrong one. We did. We looked at how tidying up how the Ten Commandments organize our life, and particularly we get to the Ten Commandments, and we talked about them or began talking about them. And it's a subject we all know, we're familiar with, but it's really helpful for us to go back and think about them from time to time with some fresh eyes. There was a Sunday school teacher who was attempting to do this with her Sunday school class, and you're talking with little kids, 5 and 6 year olds and everything. You know, one of the big ones for them is always honor your father and mother, and she's like, you know, that's, they were talking about the importance of honoring your father and mother, and the teacher asked, is there maybe a commandment that teaches us how to treat our brothers and sisters? And it was kind of quiet for a little bit. Finally, one little five-year-old boy raised his hand, and with a little hesitation, he said, thou shalt not kill, which is a pretty good rule if you've got 5 and 6 year olds that they know that one. That's a big one, so glad he got that down. Well, we're going to be continuing our study through Deuteronomy and looking at the Ten Commandments this morning. Remember where we are, the Israelites, the children of those who had been faithless the generation before, those who had failed to take the promised land as God had commanded them. They are all assembled just beyond the Jordan, and they're getting ready to go in themselves. And Moses is reminding them of the covenant that they made at Sinai. Even though it wasn't them, it was their parents who did it, he takes them back and he said, God was talking to you right there. And so Moses is reminding them of this covenant they have with God. Even though it was their parents who made the covenant, he says, by virtue of God's covenantal promise, you are a part of it. You have to make this commitment yourself. And so he's reminding them of that, and he specifically starts with the Ten Commandments. We already talked about the first three commandments last week, that all of Israel's life is supposed to grow out of this exclusive relationship with God. Everything else, every other commandment, every other every other commandment, every other, anyway, you know, commandment. Yeah, thanks. Everything else God is going to tell them is like, everything is going to be based on this relationship with me. So we get to the second part of these commandments, commands 4 through 10, and there's different ways to break up the Ten Commandments, but really the 4th through 10th commandments all point towards what does a God-centered community look like? If, like the first three commandments, you are God-centered people, now what does it look like when you live together with God-centered people? How do you treat one another? How do you treat everybody else? What are your interactions with that have to do with society at large, or with your family, or with sex, or with money, or everything else that is a part of a society? What does it look like when those are based on God's, on God? In other words, what he's saying is how we relate to God determines how we are relating to one another. How we relate to God determines how we relate to one another. So what does a God-centered community look like? And this morning, we're not even going to be able to give real focus to all of the rest of the Ten Commandments, but we're specifically going to be looking at the fourth commandment. It's the longest of the commandments, and it's the most detailed of the commandments, and it sort of gives us a transition to the other five there, or the other six there at the end. All right. This is what he says in Deuteronomy chapter 5, beginning at verse 12. He says, "Observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your town, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day." Now, have you ever asked yourself, or maybe been asked by someone else, whether Christians should continue to keep the Sabbath? This is a discussion we've had a few times in our family. Or maybe someone has asked you, is Sunday now our Sabbath day? Because, you know, their Sabbath day would have been the seventh day of the week, or Saturday on our calendar. Is Sunday now our day of Sabbath? And the answer to both questions is really yes and no. The Sabbath day in Israelite society was not a day of worship, per se. At least not the way we as Christians think about a day of worship. It wasn't like on Sabbath day, they all got dressed up and they went to temple and they did all the temple stuff there and then they went home and had a big Saturday lunch or anything like that. Sabbath was not the same sort of day of worship that you and I associate with, say, Sunday. Now, the details about what the ancient Israelites actually did on Sabbath are really scarce. I mean, there's not much at all written about what they did on the Sabbath day, because the focus of the Sabbath was never about what you do. It was more about what you don't do. The main thing about Sabbath day was don't do work. In fact, it's the only thing they were told to do was to not work and remember the God who had delivered them, the God who had brought them rest. Specifically for them, God had given them rest by freeing them from forced Egyptian labor. They were slave laborers there. You remember how in the story, especially in Exodus, we read how their laborers were, you know, they were being worked to death, literally being worked to death. And when they still continued to prosper, that the Egyptians increased their labor and made them do more and more. And they were just grinding them into the ground. And they cried out to God to deliver them from this labor every day, all day, to do nothing but work. And it was killing them. And God heard their cry, and he came in, and he delivered from this bondage, from this slave labor. And so God says, I want you to remember on this day of rest what it used to be like, what life apart from me looks like. It is work. So they remembered their deliverance from forced labor by ceasing their labors one day every week, every seventh day. The attention is focused squarely on God who gave them rest. That's what Sabbath day is all about, to remember the God who gave you rest. And how do you do that? How do you remember all that God has done for you, specifically by giving your rest? And the answer is by acting just like God and providing rest to everyone in your household and community. Not only should you rest, but so should your wife or your spouse or your children or your servants, your animals, even the foreigners who live in your community who aren't Israelites or don't live under this covenant. Everyone is given rest. In the whole land, everyone is given rest by giving rest. And that's what Sabbath is about. It's not just about you resting. It's about you providing rest for everyone else. You provide your spouse with rest. You provide your children with rest. You provide your male and female servants with rest. You provide your animals with rest. You provide the foreigners with rest. Everybody gets rest. And by doing that, Israel becomes imitators of God. And they also are reminded that by not working and still living, that God is the great provider. Think about it. They start off each week focusing on how God is a provider. And in that way, it sort of prevents an idolatry of work and self-reliance, which is written into the genetic code of most Western societies, that we survive by the sweat of our brow and the pulling ourselves up by our own bootstraps and we're going to make this and we're going to do this because we're resilient enough or we're strong enough or we're smart enough or we've got all these resources and we're just scrappy enough to do it ourselves. And God says, no, Israel, you are not. You are not strong enough. You are not smart enough. You cannot work hard enough to get what you are getting. I am the one who is giving that to you. Don't ever confuse blessings for achievements, in other words. This rest in Israelite society becomes a great equalizer in their community because they're giving their slaves, their servants, rest, and they're reminded how, look, we used to be worked 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and how did we like it? We didn't like it, so maybe we shouldn't do that to other people. So they're providing rest as well. And now the whole society becomes a picture of God's mercy and grace and salvation because everyone is treated well. In other words, in Israelite society, everyone is valuable. Everyone. Everyone has worth in God's eyes. And everyone deserves to be treated with rest and respect. And this principle becomes the basis for every other commandment that comes after it. Think about all the rest of the commandments. It applies to your parents. It says, honor your parents. For honor is it's to give weight to, weighty, kavod. It's a Hebrew word that means heavy. And so it's like give your parents their due. Even when they're too old to work. Even when they're not contributing to the goods of the household. Even when they're not able to do what they used to be able to do, you give your parents honor. Do not treat them lightly, which is basically what the opposite says, don't dishonor your parents. But give your parents the respect that they do because they're valuable. Don't kill because the person you're killing, they have value to God. Don't steal from anyone or don't sleep with someone else's spouse, for goodness sakes, because those people deserve your respect. Don't lie about other people or secretly even desire what God has given them because God has given them what he's given them, what God has given them what he has because he loves them, he respects them. God values them just as much as he values you. It's all about everyone being valuable to God, therefore valuable to us. Now think about how this made Israel look in comparison to everyone else around them. This made them different than every other nation, every other society in the ancient Near East. Not one single other society in that whole part of the world had a day off. Nobody. It was unheard of. Nobody rested. You worked every day. You know why you worked every day? Because you didn't want to starve to death. You worked every day just to exist. You worked and brought up food and took care of your animals, and you did everything, every waking moment, every possible moment that you could just to stay alive. And so here is Israel, and they're not working all the time. And they're taking a full day off, and not only them, but their slaves are taking a day off. Their children are taking a day off. Even the foreigners are taking a day off. I don't know how they're getting by. You had to be sure in every other society that you could get ahead. And so you could take advantage of anyone who wasn't legally protected by law, like your spouse or your children or your slaves or foreigners. Anyone who wasn't protected, you could take advantage of anyone as long as it could get you ahead. Israel doesn't do that. Everyone is treated with value. Even widows and orphans who had no worth in the economic system were given value. Whoever was less valuable than you was vulnerable to you in all these other societies. So here come foreigners, and remember, Israel's sitting right at these crossroads of the ancient world that you had to go through for valuable trade routes and for diplomatic missions and everything else, and they're sitting right at these crossroads, and here come the foreigners all through, and they would see this completely, to their eyes, completely bizarre society. It was a society that was prosperous despite working one less day a week. I mean, prosperous. Gold on the temple doors, prosperous. It would be a society that was protected despite the fact they don't have soldiers on their borders 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It would be a society that was treating everyone with respect, even their slaves and foreigners and children. How is it possible that they could be so successful? How could they be so weird and yet so much better? The only explanation had to be their one God. And all of a sudden, the Ten Commandments begin to take shape in the minds of foreigners, because it becomes much clearer that God never just wanted Israel. God never just wanted to be Israel's God. He always wanted everyone to see that He was the true and the living God. God was shaping Israel to be on a pedestal in front of the nations so that the whole world could see how great God was. That was His desire all along, because everyone else, even the people in Assyria and Egypt and Babylon and all these other pagan nations, they are all loved by God. So what does this mean for us here today? What are the implications for Forest Mill as a community of God's people? And right off the bat, I want you to know, and you need to know, that you need and deserve rest, every one of you. And by rest, I don't mean time zoned out in front of the TV. As fun as that can be during March Madness, what I mean by rest is real rest. Asking this is the way we usually phrase the question is, do Christians have to keep the Sabbath today? I mean, that's the real question, is do we as Christians still have to keep the Sabbath, or do you as Christians still have to keep the Sabbath? And asking it that way, we're not a bunch of Pharisees trying to figure out what laws we ought to enforce on one another. We're not the ones trying to figure out, how can I make sure that old John Luke doesn't do what I don't want him to do on the day I don't want him to do it. That was the problem Jesus had with the Pharisees, is that they were policing everybody, trying to figure out, how can I enforce this on everyone else? And to ask that is to ask the wrong question in the wrong way. Asking whether Christians have to observe the Sabbath misses the point of Sabbath entirely. We're not the Pharisees trying to enforce laws on one another. We are a God-centered community seeking to find ways to act like God, taking and giving rest, just like God gave us rest. So maybe you work a job that you don't get Sundays off, or you don't get some Sundays off, or you don't get Sunday mornings off, and that's understandable. By the way, the early church didn't observe the Sabbath, certainly not the Gentiles, didn't observe the Sabbath. And they would meet to worship on Sunday, but they would have to meet before they went to work because they lived in a Roman world, especially the slaves. They didn't get Sundays off. They didn't get any days off. So the idea of Sunday has always been the Sabbath, that comes along a little bit later. But the first Christians did understand the importance of rest. And so maybe you can't get Sundays off. Maybe you can get another day, a Saturday or a Thursday or a Tuesday. It doesn't really matter which day. Or maybe you can just set aside some time each day. Maybe you can take the time in some time in the morning. Or maybe you can take some time in the evenings. Or maybe you get a longer lunch break. I don't know. But just setting aside some time to cease, to just stop. To stop working, to stop browsing your phone, to get off social media, to back away from the busyness, the hubbub, and just be with God. The important thing isn't how you do it. The important thing is why you do it. We do it to remember a God who has saved us and cares for us. That's what Sabbath is all about. The Sabbath was not ever meant to be another burden. It was meant to be a blessing. And in that manner, we're meant to find ways to give everyone else around us rest from their labors. So some have asked the question, can Christians go out to eat at restaurants on Sundays? Maybe you've pondered this before, I understand where the question's coming from. But again, that's not the real important thing, because those restaurants are going to be open whether we go there or not, probably, and those people are going to be working, and maybe our going and being there could actually be a blessing to them. But how can we do that in such a way that it's a blessing? Well, don't be over demanding and obnoxious when you go to Sunday lunch. Let's try there. Maybe tipping your servers extra, because a real rest would be them knowing they could get their bills paid. Go be a blessing. And maybe not just on Sunday, maybe on Friday night. Maybe on Tuesday morning. Just find ways to give those around you rest. Guys, when you come home and your wife comes home from work, if you're both working, find ways to give her rest. If you have kids, find ways to give them rest. If you have a fellow employee who's weighted down, find ways to give them rest. You can be a blessing everywhere, every day, not just getting rest for yourself, but giving rest to others. Just being the people of God in all those situations. And in so doing, we eliminate all of the distinctions, all the privileges that we may have over others. I don't have to wait tables on a Sunday because I'm blessed with a great job that I love and working with people I love. So I don't have to do a job that's really super physically and emotionally taxing on Sunday afternoon. So I got that blessing, but I don't lord it over those who are caught there for now or who have chosen that for now. Instead, Sabbath means that all of those distinctions get erased. Distinctions based on gender or ethnicity or social status or rich or poor. All of those dissolve in the grace that flows freely, that's been bestowed on everyone. We are not just those who take, but those who give grace and rest. That's what Sabbath is all about. So Forest Mill, my prayer for you, our prayer for you as you go out this week, is that you will be a Sabbath people, finding ways to take time to reflect on the God who has provided for you and finding ways to provide for others, those in your family, those in your community, those at your work. Be a giver of rest and grace. And may God bless you in that endeavor. If we can pray for you this morning, lift you up, encourage you, whether it's for forgiveness or strength or direction or hope or healing, we just want you to know that you are a valuable part of our community and we love you and we want to provide Sabbath to you as well. If there's anything we can do for you this morning, won't you come, stand, and as we sing.